You're listening to Voice Memos, the show about two longtime friends who have informative, yet brief discussions about multitudinous topics. If you want to go deep into a topic, this is not the podcast for you. We keep it shallow. Now, please welcome your hosts, Jen and Myron.
So, we're starting this show solo. I'm Han Solo today. Myron Solo, because Jen, my dependable, in air quotes, partner, my voice memo partner, is out sick. She called out sick today. Like she is a call center rep at the last minute calling out sick because she partied too hard and now she's claiming she snowed in. All those basic excuses we all use working in call centers. Or she got a flat. You know, called out sick. Man, are you kidding me? So, you know, we reached 100 episodes with our last week episode. And thanks for all the feedback and the lovely warm wishes. And episode 101, or episode one of our new lives, she called out sick. So that obviously means she's up for a written warning. Just skip the verbal, skip the, you know, the counseling and all that. Just go right to written warning, which is exactly what should have happened to Clarence Thomas. Because the other day, that fathead fascist decided not to come to work. He didn't give them any notice, nothing. He just didn't come to work on the Supreme Court. And which was unusual, because the case before the Supreme Court involves his wife, the traitor, and January 6th organizer. So, but instead of recusing himself from that, he then did come back to work the next day. But instead of recusing himself from that, he's sitting there adjudicating whether or not the January 6th people, right, traitors, violent hoodlums, thugs, liars, and crooks should remain in prison. And he had the nerve to say that he didn't think what they did was any different than protesting any other government action. Because, of course, he is going to say that because his wife is one of them. She was a main organizer, and her old fat pig head should be locked up. Okay, so anyway, we're doing without Jen. So speaking of politics, there's a little bit of a trial going on in New York. So Donald Jerkoff Trump is on trial in New York. This is a different trial because that mofo has so many trials. This is the one where he got busted paying former adult sex star Stormy Daniels hush money to bury the story about him having an affair with her while he was married so that it didn't harm his presidential prospects. He paid her off through his former handler, Michael Cohen. He wrote a $130,000 check that Michael Cohen used to give to Stormy Daniels and to silence her. But, you know, if you know anything about Miss Daniels, and she has a pretty broad public social media following on different apps. She's very sharp. She's very smart, funny. And she's a grown-up, right? She's a grown-up, but she has no shame about her work, her career. And she should. Let's be clear that, you know, she had a job. And I think that it is if his lawyers try to get her on the stand, they're going to lose. That lady is sharp. So, but the trial is in New York, and this is a criminal trial, which means in theory, he could go to jail because Michael Cohen went to jail. Because you can't, the laws that you break, you're running for president or public office, and you lie and hide funds where funds are coming from. You break federal laws, state and federal laws. And so that's what Michael Cohen went to prison for. It's almost like money laundering, but they have other terms for it. But anyway, so yeah, so he's in a criminal trial, and then this week they've been selecting a jury. Let me just tell you how awful this has been. So they had 96 potential jurors, and you know how they got to bring them all in, and the lawyers on both sides can question them, and then they can strike some. You know the whole jury process. If you watch all the procedural lawyer shows and judge shows on TV, you have a good idea how that process worked. Now it's a little different in every state, but generally, you get to see the people. Both sides get to question them, and they can kick them out for any reason they want, right? But you only get so many you can do like that. So anyway, they got to get down to 12 and maybe some alternates. So, and the judge has warned, repeatedly warned Donald Trump to not harass the jurors because, you know, he refuses to control himself. So he's been admonished a couple of times, you know, don't make noise, you know, stop it. He's using his phone. He's got admonished to, you know, put the phone away. People are making fun of him because he's falling asleep because, you know, without his pharmaceuticals, he can't sit still and just listen because he, just like any narcissist, he always has to be holding court. And as long as he's listening to himself talk, he can stay awake. But if he has to sit and listen to anyone else talk because he's such a nincompoop, he can't do it. So he falls asleep because he's, you know, he's always talking about sleepy Joe for Joe Biden. You know what? Everything they say is always a projection. He can't stay awake. So now I don't know that he uses pharmaceuticals like Adderall and cocaine and ketamine. I don't know that he uses those. But anyway, let's go to the next topic. So anyway, they've had problems with the jurors because CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, they're telling the data, the information about the jurors without releasing their names. However, they're releasing so much information like occupation, maybe where they went to school, if they're married or single, that it's now hard to determine who these people are. And why that's an issue is the judge already told Donald Trump's team that, look, we will give you the names of the jurors on a piece of paper that you cannot photograph or copy, and you have to give it back to us at the end of the day, right? Because the jurors are targets of crazy MAGA Republicans. They know they're going to be targets. And some of the steps that the judge has taken, which I don't believe are enough, but some of the steps that he has taken, people, professional court watchers and lawyers and so forth, have said and are saying those steps that he's taken are the normal steps you take when there's a person in the mob or criminal enterprise who's on trial. Now, think about that for a minute. You have an American president on trial, former American president, and you have to treat him like he's a mobster because he is, and his people are. So there's already been one juror who was seated as one of the 12 who asked out. She said because her information got out and she fears for her safety. That's the country we are. That's the country we are. So when you talk about shithole third world countries, look in the mirror, because that's what a large part of this country is. So anyway, so that trial is happening. And in theory, he could go to prison, but I wrote an article on my blog and on Medium. And I wrote it, I think it was December 20th, December 13th. Anyway, somewhere in December, late, mid to late December in 2020. And it is, I state, the title of the article is Donald Trump will not go to prison. And I still believe that. He will not go to prison. He could be sentenced to prison in this criminal trial, but he won't. He won't. And the reason why is just like what you're seeing with these procedures. In this trial, or what you see in the other New York trial, where he that was civil, so he lost money, right? You could get him on money. The trial that's going on in Georgia, that's still going on, and that's criminal. In theory, he could go to prison for that. Stealing government documents, and we know he sold secrets and stuff. You know, he's done traitorous things. And he's still holding on to some of that stuff in Florida. But the trial there is still going on. In theory, he can go to prison for that. And he can go to prison for the one that's happening right now. But I hold that what I wrote in 2020, December 2020, is still true. He will not go to prison because we don't have our justice system is not designed to put an American president in prison, unless the American president is a black or white woman. If the black woman is a woman, right, black or white, is Barack Obama, black man, or by some miracle, we get Hispanic, Latino, Asian. It's not going to put a white man in prison. It's not. And so think of it like this. You know how the so-called founding fathers, you know, they had muskets, those kind of rifles, and they wrote some stuff in, you know, the Second Amendment to the Constitution about free arms and bearing arms and that kind of stuff, and they, how they could not envision military weapons, automatic weapons, AKs, ARs, all those kind of weapons that we have now, those weapons of mass destruction that one person can have that can blow off 500 rounds in 20 seconds, how they couldn't envision that, and how that constitutional thing from the 1700s is still governing our gun laws today and is wholly and entirely inadequate. Now, that makes sense. Now, think about, they wrote safeguards into the Constitution about the sharing of power between the executive, meaning the president, the military, or not the military, the executive, the legislative, you know, the Congress, and the judicial, the courts, also the military, just sort of out there, but how they wrote all that up as checks and balances and all this kind of stuff. But that was in the 1700s. They did not anticipate a person like Donald Trump, who has followers, and if you go by the last election, 71 million followers, who are okay with doing away with every check and balance, ignoring every single one so that Donald Trump can be promoted. They couldn't anticipate that. And they couldn't anticipate that someone like him, who is obviously paid by the Saudis, by the Russians, by other foreign entities and individuals, would be a president and not be held accountable to those checks and balances. It didn't anticipate that. Now, some people say, no, it really did, because, you know, they had come out from King George or whomever, the monarchy, and they really didn't want anybody to have, you know, ultimate power, so there's checks and balances and stuff. But that's the 1700s. So just like they were regulating muskets in the 1700s, and that's inadequate for the AR and the automatic weapons and Glocks and all that, they're regulating what a man in the office of the president could do in the 1700s, but they didn't anticipate 200 something years later, or 300 years later, a Donald Trump. So the safeguards that are in place are inadequate to face today's threats that are posed by Donald Trump. And he's not going to go to prison. And he will be up for election in November. So 4 years after he tried to overthrow the government, right, his forces, and I call them forces, they were ground troops, tried to overthrow the government. They overtook what was promoted to all of us as one of the safest and most guarded institutions in the world, the Capitol. The Capitol. They took it over, and not only did they march Confederate flags through there, which hadn't even been done in the Civil War, they lowered the American flag and put up the Donald Trump flag. And only some of those ground people got jail. And it's at the Supreme Court whether they should even stay in jail. None of the leaders, including the elected people in Congress and the Senate, and then the leader is being allowed to run again. And there are people that you and I know, adults who have jobs, kids, they have bills, they take vacations, they watch reality TV, they barbecue, they run small businesses, and they are still thinking, you know what? I think he should be our president. That's how precarious democracy is. So And I got an example for you. So there's a person who has a small business owner, and they question, my taxes went up, so or I have to pay my employees more because minimum wage went up. I think I'm just going to vote for Donald Trump. So if you know anybody like that, you should ask them this simple question. If you have a small business, or if you work in corporate, if you hire people, or you're, even if you don't hire people, coworkers, do you want someone working for you who's been, or would you hire someone who's been convicted of rape, who has 91 indictments across three states and the District of Columbia, who has judgments in one of those, and he isn't allowed to do business in the entire state of New York, and he has a $700 million fine, who has active and ongoing court cases, including criminal court cases. And if you're going to hire him into like a manager or an executive role in the company, who has, because they look at these things when you're going into the C-level suites, who has 5 kids by 3 women, and it is documented publicly that he cheated on all his wives, and in fact, one of the trials is for him paying a sex worker while his wife is pregnant. So, would you hire that person? And if you're like me, we do these little background checks, and if there's anything, you're not getting hired. Google's not going to hire you. Safeway won't hire you. Your local call center for whomever, they're not going to hire you. It's hard to get a job when you have things on your record. But yet you have people who hire people for jobs, who run small businesses, are willing to throw that all the way and say, well, but that's okay. But he should be the top person in the country. Whew, that's a mess. So anyway, his trial is going on, and they think in New York, they think it's going to start in a week or so. I think tomorrow or Monday, the judge is hearing, is going to decide on should what are the sanctions to put on, because Trump is already under a gag order. He's breaking a gag order multiple times. And sort of tempting the judge to see what the judge will do. And he could put him in jail for it. But I just don't think Donald Trump's going to jail, because the American system is not designed to take a white man, former president, and perp walk him in front of the entire world, because that goes against white supremacy. Like, you can't do that. This country cannot do that. Like, it will not. It will not. It can, but it will not. And so, and I would love to be proven wrong, because I want that mofo locked up under the prison. But let's see what happens. So my magazine is out, my April edition of the Dear Dean magazine. If you haven't gotten it, it's free. It's a digital magazine. I get a lot of contributor writers from around the country, and it's free. So, if you go to DearDean.com, you can sign up, or not DearDean, Dear Dean Publishing, you can sign up, or check me out on social media. But my issue, the cover issue, is Dawn of an Era. And I have a photo of Dawn Staley and Beyonce. Because Dawn Staley is a coach of the South Carolina Gamecocks, which is among the best college nicknames in all college world, Gamecocks. So, and when they played the Oregon Beavers, well, okay, that's just funny. The Gamecocks and the Oregon Beavers played. But anyway, so her team this year is 38-0. So they did not lose a game, right? They did not lose a game, and they won a national championship. And normally in American sport, that when a team is pursuing an undefeated season, and you can't get undefeated seasons in pro football or pro basketball. You can't get it in pro baseball. Baseball is 162 games. Basketball is 82 games. Pro basketball is 82 games. You can get it in football, but it hasn't been done since the 70s, since Don Shula and the Miami Dolphins did it. And a couple teams have gotten close, losing two games. I think the Niners 1 year. I think, and there's been a few teams that have lost one game in the different eras. The Raiders had a season, they only lost one game, I believe. The New England Patriots lost only one game. So a few teams have gotten close. So it's doable in professional football. I think I misspoke and said it wasn't doable, but it is doable, but it hasn't happened since 1972, I believe. And in basketball, the Warriors got their closest to something as ridiculous as an undefeated season. 1 year, they lost only 9 games out of 82, and that's the all-time record. They won a bunch of playoff games, and they were actually winning. That's the season they lost the championship. They were up 3-1 against LeBron James in Cleveland, and they lost that title to them. And so they still get ridiculed for that, even though they won 4 titles, including beating LeBron twice. So anyway, so if there's a pursuit of perfection, there's always big hype. But because the sports media is dominated by men, the South Carolina Gamecocks and the Dawn Study didn't get the hype that they really, what they, from a sports perspective, deserved. Because they didn't win the title last year, but they won it the year before. And they won it a few years before that. So they are very good and above average, a great program under Dawn Staley. Dawn Staley is a Hall of Famer herself. She's a great college player at Virginia. And the pros, an Olympian, and as a coach, like she is acclaimed. But they were put aside because instead the sports media focused on Caitlin Clark, who is a basketball player, and she was in Iowa, at the University of Iowa. And she was on her way to breaking the all-time points record, NCAA points record for men or women. And Caitlin Clark is a great shooter. Like, she can absolutely ball and shoot the ball. And actually, she doesn't play point guard too often, but she's also a great point guard. Her court awareness, her passing skills, her running the break, things like that are all exceptionally well. And she can just shoot the lights. And she can shoot the lights out from NBA 3. Like, she has that kind of range. And because Iowa had made it to the finals last year against LSU, they lost to Angel Reese and LSU team, and Iowa made it back this year. So there was a lot of hype around her because she was on her way to breaking that record, which she did break, and Iowa making it back to the finals against South Carolina undefeated. And sometime in American sport, some things just bubble up to the surface, the zeitgeist. You just hit the moment. Caitlin Clark hit the moment. Now, some of that is pushed because sports media is heavily populated by the people who decide the stories, the highlights. They're mostly and almost exclusively white men. And so she got a lot of hype. It wasn't that it wasn't deserved. There should have been an equal amount, if not more, from a historical standpoint, the Dawn Staley, South Carolina Gamecocks story should have been bigger. So they get to the finals, and American sports fans love a finals in any sport that is clearly demarcated by race. America loves that. America loves that. So you had the white player of the year, all-time leading scorer, Caitlin Clark, on Iowa, a state that's 90%, 90%+ white, right? Against Dawn Staley, a black woman, and the South Carolina Gamecocks from South Carolina, a heavily black state and a heavily black school from an athletic standpoint. So you have the Midwest, which America likes to think is mostly white. All of America is mostly white. But America tends to forget there are black people in the Midwest, but that's for another day. Against a Southern team, the South is heavily associated with black and white people in conflict, right? So those are some of the storylines that come into this game, this championship game. And America loves that because then you can get all the social media action, you get the betting action, you can get the racists, and you get the whole deal all channeled into this one game. And Caitlin Clark had a good game. I wouldn't even say she had a very good game, but she didn't have a great game. She had a great quarter. She scored 18 in the first quarter. Like, it was lights out. She was lighting it up. But then Dawn Staley changed who was guarding her. And that was a moment because the lady who was guarding her, Raven is her name, when they played last year, Raven was not a good shooter. And Caitlin Clark at one point was guarding her and she waved her off. And for people that don't know basketball, waving off means you literally motion with your hand, like you're telling someone to get away from you, but it's waving off. It means that you have no fear or care that this person is going to shoot because you know they're not going to make it. So it's an intimidation deal, but it's a sign of disrespect, right? And so, but it's not uncommon. It's a sign of disrespect, but everyone knew what that was. It was like, oh, she laid off her. She just let her shoot. And that's a common defensive tactic in basketball. If you know someone's not going to shoot, you don't guard them close. You worry about the other person who can't shoot, right? You guard them closer. So, like, on the Warriors, teams don't mind Draymond Green shooting three-point shots. They'd rather have two or three players in Curry's space because they know he can make it. I don't care about Draymond Green. So it was a moment like that Caitlin Clark waved Raven off. So in the championship game this year, when Caitlin Clark was lighting up the scoreboard in the first quarter, Dawn Staley, being the great coach she is, she told Raven, you go guard Caitlin Clark right now. And Raven, I want to say her name is Johnson, but I could be wrong. She, as much as you can shut down a shooter like Caitlin Clark, Raven shut her down. She stole four passes from her. She limited Clark for the rest of the game. I want to say to maybe 16, 17 points. It wasn't that much. It made her not the biggest factor in the game. And the South Carolina Gamecocks and Dawn Staley, they won the national championship. Right. So you get that. OK, so that's just the start. So some interesting things came out of the championship. It was because the men's championship was the next day. So women played on Sunday. The men played Monday. And this was the first time that the women's college national championship game drew more viewers than the men's championship game by a lot. They had like 4 or 5 million more viewers. And that was because it reached that level in America, that zeitgeist. It bubbled up. You had a white superstar, right, versus a team that's going to be undefeated and felt disrespected that they weren't the big story. And that team was led by a Black woman with mostly Black players on the team. So you had those deals. Whereas in the men's, you had University of Connecticut, UConn, who won it last year, and they were just dominant. And they went up against, I don't even remember, like it's been a week, I don't even remember, like maybe North Carolina or something like that. I don't know, North Carolina State. Anyway, they wiped them out, like it wasn't close. But the women outdrew the men. So then the next big thing was the WNBA draft, right? So the WNBA is a summer league so that they don't compete with the men, and they held their draft. And it was televised, the top women college players were there, most of them, because some are overseas because they draft people into the league as well. And, you know, they're dressed to the nines. And women are just dressed. And they look like Amazon warriors. They're just like, if you took the Amazon off the mascara and you put them in modern clothing, and you got to figure, and these women are all 18 to 23. 19 to 24, something like that, right? So they're young. They're all, you know, 5'9 to 6'7, because you know the basketball players, so they're very tall. And they just looked like Amazon warriors dressed up. Like it was fantastic. And it was big. They had all the fanfare, the cameras. It was really incredible. But out of that comes the contracts. So Caitlin Clark went number one to Indiana. And then Tamila Cardoso from South Carolina went number two. Some other players, Angel Reese, were number seven. But then their contracts come out. So Caitlin Clark is going to earn about, you have a rookie contract where it's 3 years, you play with that team, and the option for the fourth year. It's the same for every rookie in the WNBA. And her contract is less than $1 million. I think it averages maybe $75,000 to $80,000 a year. So the number one college basketball player going to the pros, her first contract is something like, so 3 years, so say it's 80,000. So that's what, 240,000 in a third, in a fourth year, 400 something, I don't know, like $600. It's not a lot of money. Compare that to the top draft choice for the NBA, where their rookie salary pays them $12 million a year. So you got $12 million a year for the NBA, and you have for the WNBA, she's going to make about 80,000 a year. So, and rightly people bring it up. Angel Reese is going to make less than that. Her rookie contract is $300,000 over 4 years, 3 years with a 4 year option. And her comparable seventh round, she was a seventh round, seventh pick in the draft. And the seventh pick in the NBA draft was around $8 million a year. And so the bro sports guys will say, well, they don't make, WNBA is not the same. It's not as big. They don't make the money. They'll say all those things. And while there's some truth to that, because the NBA owns the WNBA, and the NBA is like $80, $90 billion business. And they may even say, well, the WNBA lost $10 million last year. The NBA is an $80, $90 billion business. And they gave an excuse that they lost 10 million. And let me tell you something. Anytime the owners are telling you they're losing money, they're lying. They're lying. Even if they're talking about the WNBA, they are lying. They're not losing money. They're not. The billionaires, they never lose money. They're lying. But even if that were true, even if you say, well, nobody watches WNBA, which is not true, but let's just say they don't have the audience and the widespread viewers and stories and such as an NBA, and they don't, like, that's a truth. You still shouldn't have your top WNBA draft choice making under 100,000 and the top NBA draft choice making 12 million. You still shouldn't have that, right? And so now, in the NBA's defense, they have started in the last 5 years, they've done more, right? They start promoting the WNBA. They have NBA stars show up at the games. They have WNBA stars. They'll be at some of the playoff games or the NBA that starts this week. They do some ambassador things. Even with all that, they don't do enough. They don't do enough. And you have to, and all these billionaires, they all know this. You have to spend money to make money. So you can't just sit back and say they're not making us money. You have to spend more advertising, more in-city promotions. Yes, you need to pay them more. You need to prevent them from going overseas to have to find work and income and keep them here year-round so you can have some year-round activity. And if you hit back at the people, remember the people were complaining, why did Brittney Griner have to go to Russia to play? She shouldn't have gone. This is why, because she wasn't making any goddamn money in the WNBA. This is why. Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't say you shouldn't play overseas anywhere. You should only play here. And then say, but you shouldn't make any more money than you make. So, anyway, that was a lot. That was a bit of a rant. And I went a little bit deep, but you know what? That's that. So, and the NBA playoffs are starting right now. So we'll get into some NBA picks pretty soon when Jen comes back. She will hate that. She ain't talking about that shit like that. Okay, so did you get your taxes done? Because April 15th was the tax day, and taxes are due. And we talked about this last week that I don't know. It seems like we're the only country that does something that's really terrible tax code. Where you have to resubmit all your information to the government every year, and If you don't, you get fines and penalties and all that, even though they have all your information, which is really jacked up. And people, some people are mad right now because the Donald Trump tax cuts took effect in 2020. Well, it took effect when he was in office in 2020, but they were yearly increases on the middle class up until this year, with the largest increase coming this year, because they wanted people, Republicans wanted you mad at Democrats because the Democrats would be in office and people's federal taxes go up. Why that make people mad at Democrats, even though this was put in place by Donald Trump and Republicans, but they know that the average American doesn't pay attention. And then they just pop up, oh my God, my taxes are going up. You know why your taxes are going up, dumbass? Because you didn't vote for the lady, right, in 2016, because you were mad about her emails. That's why. And instead, you either didn't vote or you voted for a career criminal because he told you he was good at business, even though every business he's ever had has gone bankrupt. And you vote, well, I like what he says. But you like when he talks about how Mexicans are rapists and how he's racist and wants to kill people for dealing drugs, and how he ended he wanted to kick the U.S. or have the U.S. withdraw from NATO. Like, you wanted all. You wanted all that, and you're paying the price today. And so we talk about this often, that you vote, or we vote to reduce harm, not just today, and not just for ourselves, but for tomorrow and for someone else. That's why. And you have to do it every single time you can vote. Every single time. Every single time. Because it takes a long time to change things. And so I hope you get a tax refund. But if you didn't, you probably got a split. It's probably split in that you probably owe the feds more. But if you live in a blue state, you probably got back a little bit more from a blue state, because some of the blue states changed their taxes to adjust for what was going to happen with people's federal taxes. So you might get a break there. But again, thank your local Democrat for that, not that fat-headed orange motherfucker who's on trial in New York, because he royally screwed you over. And you know what he says he's going to do when he get back in office? He's going to do it again. He says he's going to do it again, which is like he said he's going to tell Israel to wipe Gaza off the map. Do whatever you need to do, wipe them off the map. But you have these dumb people here protesting Democrats who are trying to work through a two-state solution, and who want that Donald Trump of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, out of office, right? You have these pro-Hamas people who are deluded. Ops people who are doing exactly what Russia is telling them to do, right? Now, there's some people who are just duped into it, who are honestly duped into it because they're too dumb to read and understand things for themselves. They're just believing what people are telling them. But all of that is easily traced back to Russian and Chinese disinformation tactics that flood America, social media, and our airways. It is. Like, it's very easy to see. So you have this lady in Bakersfield at the city council. She got up there. Now, Bakersfield is heavily Republican. And let me tell you, this is why these people generally don't protest Republicans. Because she got up there in her misguided righteous anger. And she's an Indian woman, right? She got up there and told them she wished they all get the guillotine to the city council. The city council of Bakersfield, because she wants them to demand that Israel leaves Gaza. Bakersfield, California. She's protesting them because she says they need to tell Israel to leave Gaza. If that ain't the most batshit thing you've ever heard. And she's at the public speaking podium and she's in her misguided righteous anger and she says, well, we're going to come to your house and kill you, murder you. Well, that's a threat on a public official. So you know what they did? They arrested her dumbass. And they charged her with, I don't know, a dozen felonies and all kinds of stuff. She's going to go to prison. I'm sure they'll drop some of those charges or negotiate dropping some of those charges. But you know what? You try to be a brown person in a Republican stronghold like Bakersfield, threatening city council folk on camera at the podium with police right there. And all her little protesting white friends nowhere around. Now she's in prison. Got on $1 million bond. You know, so look, let me tell you something. This is what black people learned. Our parents tell us when we're growing up, you ain't like your little white friends. You can't do what they do. Because you will get shot, killed, jailed. Right? And maybe in that order, maybe not in that order. You can't do the same thing. Because it's not the same. You see these protesters that blocked the Golden Gate Bridge? A lot of white people. Let me tell you something. They're going to get bridge. Some people got money. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. Right to go to get bridge. And one guy tried to cement his hand. I'm just crazy stuff, right? And now some of those people are getting sued by some of the people who are on the bridge who couldn't get to work, couldn't get to hospitals, couldn't get to airline, all these different things, right? And then someone will say, well, black people protested in the 50s and 60s, you know what we did? And I say, it wasn't me. I'm not old enough. It was strategic. They boycotted, right? They didn't, like, when they marched across the M.G. Petty Bridge, they didn't blockade it. They marched across it. When they protested busing, right, they didn't stop the buses. They didn't do that. They didn't stop people from getting to work. And the NAACP, and not just black people, it was Jewish people too, I'm very clear about that, right? Who strategized how best to make their actions effective, right? So they boycotted. And they boycotted. They did march, but they marched with the purpose of not harming other people, but bringing about and showcasing the injustice, right, in this country, not injustice 15,000 miles away, right here, right now. And the very laws that the people today are using and misusing to protest, to block bridges, airports, to block airport roads, to New York Airport, San Francisco Airport, other places around the country. That came out of very smart, intelligent, strategic planning on how to affect change and break down the barriers of segregation and institutional and codified racism. Right? And if these numbnuts today would study and learn how to do it, they could probably make some progress. But in the acts and the ways of doing it today, it's not strategic, it's dumb. And if you get up and tell someone you're gonna go to their house and kill them, you're gonna go to prison. Because you're just at them, you're not helping your cause, you're not winning over hearts and minds and votes, you're not doing anything. All you're doing is throwing a public temper tantrum. When black people marched on Washington, right? They got all the permits they needed. They got celebrities on their side. They let politicians know. They worked it out with local police. And through every march, every public demonstration, and including the march in Washington, the leadership people who were organizing these marches were very clear. We are nonviolent. The reason for that was, it's just not enough of us. And you cannot create a bloodbath. You have to stand tall in your conviction about what's going to happen and what you need, and you state it, and then you go vote for it, right? You make it happen that way. And you don't get what you want with one vote or two votes. You have to continually vote to get what you want, because it changes. This country is a behemoth, and our justice codes, laws, city by city, county, district, township, village, it moves to change, but very, very slowly. You have to work through it. And that's what changed in this country. If you think about somehow you're going to block Columbia University or Google. 28 Google employees got fired because they occupied their boss's office and some grounds around Google's headquarters. And you know what? Google is a private company. And they don't owe you shit. And in California, you can be, California is one of those right to work states. You can be fired for no reason, right? And Google was like, look, you need to leave. And Google was out there taking names, or they probably don't take names. They probably got drones or something, you know, little sensors, because everybody's badges are telling who's there. They looked at all the records and said, okay, you 28, you are fired immediately. No more money, no nothing. You can't go back in the building, no more access. They were done. It happened just like that. And there's a couple of colleges that have said, the private colleges, right, that have said, okay, we see you protesting. You need to vacate this space. You know, you're calling people the N-word, all this kind of stuff, harassing these instructors, educators coming and going. You need to leave at X amount of time. If you don't, not only are we pulling your scholarship, we are banning you from school because it's private. This is the thing that white people created, private schools that didn't have to be beholden to what public institutions are beholden to. Well, you know what? They're using that against white people now because they think that they are untouchable protesting these private spaces. You're not. So Iran lobbed a bunch of missiles at Israel. And Israel has what's called an Iron Dome. It's air defense. It's a fancy name for air defense. And none of the missiles hit their targets. And it takes a while for missiles to get from Iran to Israel. So they have plenty of time to prepare. And I should back up, because Israel bombed Hezbollah in, I want to say, Syria. And Hezbollah is a terrorist-backed organization of Iran. Like, Iran runs a few different terrorist organizations, and that's one of them. And Israel bombed them because this Middle East thing is, like, spiraling. It's a mess. It's a mess, right? Because you have Iran, you have Syria, you have Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis who are in Yemen. You got all these people going against Israel. And you got some terrorists. Oh, Israel bombed them. I think they were in Lebanon. Israel bombed them in Lebanon. And so Iran retaliated. So Israel said, okay, look, we knocked down your little missiles. And Israel is trying to figure out, like, what do we do right now? Because the U.S. said, you know what? You need to chill. You bombed them. They shot some missiles back at you. Everybody should just stand down now. Because we're not getting involved in this shit. That's what President Biden said. We're not doing this. But the problem is, the U.S. can't dictate everything that happens there. And some of that work done to contain Iran is done by the U.S., obviously, but also Great Britain, but also Saudi Arabia and a couple other European nations. And the U.S. even asked China, hey, you get in there and try to stop these motherfuckers too. And the reason is China, because China also buys oil there and sells shit there. So everybody got a vested interest, right, in keeping those waterways open. This is like some Star Wars shit, right? Blockades. Iran is like, I want to start blocking ships in the Persian Gulf. And the U.S. is like, you know what? Before we deal with you, we're going to ask China to deal with you. Right, because so much of the world's goods, including oil, flow from there. And so you start disrupting world economies on this shit. You get everybody mad. And, you know, you can trace that back to Donald Trump, too. Because President Obama spent years working and negotiating with Iran to bring them back into the global community and got them to agree to break down and stop all their nuclear experiments, all their nuclear bomb building, everything, in exchange for releasing their international funds, welcoming them back into the world community. And Iran agreed to everything. It was some hard negotiations. Donald Trump got in office and said, no, we're backing out of that. We're not doing it. Iran said, okay, fuck y'all then, and start building nuclear bombs again. Just like that. So voting matters on a global scale as well. So anyway, I don't know what's going to happen with that war, but I suspect that it will stay active in some way through our election, because Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't want President Biden to win again. And he and Republicans figure that as long as that war goes on, and as long as those people on the far left continue to protest, that that will harm President Biden. And so if you think, if you feel bad about Gazans starving and needing food and medicine and things like that, just think about the fact that the president of Israel is colluding with the Republicans to make sure that that keeps happening. So don't vote for Donald Trump. It'll get worse. I wonder if anybody watches hockey. Anybody watch hockey? I mean, the hockey playoffs are going on. If you watch hockey, let us know on one of our social media deals. We could talk about a little hockey. So here's what I'm watching. So I got a 7-day trial to the to shut where scary movies are. And you know what? There's some good movies on there. So I just watched one today called The Rental. These two brothers and their wives, I think a wife and a girlfriend, maybe, I don't know. They rent a cabin, and there's a little incident between one brother and the other brother's wife. And there is, all hell breaks out. Like, at first, it's titled as horror. I thought, I'm watching the movie, thinking, well, how can this be horror? This is no monsters. What the hell? But it is horror. And it's very good. I watched a movie on there. So it's called The Rental. I watched a movie called The Gates. And it's on Shutter, so it's horror. It was really well done. It's set in the old days. I think like maybe the 1800s or something. And, you know, they've discovered electricity. And I think they're in England, and they've discovered, you know, the electric chair. And, you know, they electrify this guy, but they simultaneously, this scientist is experimenting with electricity in another way. And I think they bring a demon back or something. It was like, wow. And it's really good, though. It's very good. So I'm watching that. I'm not caught up on Shogun. I gotta get caught up on it, but I'm trying to finish a couple other series, and I'm watching Shogun. It's well worth the watch. Please watch Abbott Elementary. It is the best sitcom on TV. I'm on the second season of The Bear. I'm almost done. And as a matter of fact, the guy, the head chef on The Bear, is in this movie, The Rental. So that the Bear guy is in it. Allison Brie from Community is in it. And then this other guy, you'll know him when you see him, but he always plays like sort of like psychopaths. He's in it. If you ever seen Reacher on Amazon Prime, it's very good. It's two seasons. It's very good. It's been renewed for a third. And I've said this before, Three Body Problem on Netflix, on Amazon Prime, and on Peacock is very good. Now, the Netflix one is an American-made version of the books written by a Chinese author. I can't think of his name right now. I think it's three books. And it's a cerebral sci-fi book series, essentially like end of the world kind of deal, but it's how it's happening. And so Netflix adapted it. It's already approved for a couple of three seasons, I think. Season one is out there. It's very, very good. And then Chinese filmmakers adapted it. And that version is on Amazon and on Peacock. And those are two different versions, because the Peacock one has more episodes than the Amazon one. It's the same version, but Peacock has two extra episodes. I don't know why, but it's made by Chinese directors and actors, and it's also very good in a different way, but it's very good. But let me tell you what to avoid on Netflix. Do not watch the new cartoon Good Times on Netflix. Now, it has the title of the old 70s TV show with Florida Evans, James Evans, J.J. Evans, Michael Evans, and Thelma Evans, the Evans family who lived in a Cabrini Green in Chicago, and they were poor, and it was set in the 70s, and it was all about, you know, their family, their love of family, and the daily struggle of being poor in the city, right? Now, it is fondly remembered. There are some issues with some of the episodes that, looking back, are a little exploitative. However, for the time it's set and the time that we were watching, coming out of the 60s and things, and just getting Black people and families, a family unit on TV was a big deal, right? So it is more remembered fondly than not, even though you can break down some things now, but that's doing it, you know, 40, 50 years in hindsight. For its time, very fondly remembered. The TV cartoon is an absolute disaster. The Netflix cartoon is an absolute disaster. It's 10 episodes, one season. I watched five and could get, I could get no further. It is, there's no redeeming value in any of the episodes on that thing. And it has Black writers. It has famous Black actors who are the voice actors. And before Norman Lear died, he was part of that production team. So he was part of this as well. It's awful. It's really, it's an embarrassment. I'm ashamed. And for Netflix to, for that to make it out, writers, producers, executive writer, producers, directors, marketing team, everybody should be fired. Everybody. It's a disgrace. I wrote a review about it. It's on, you can find my review on Medium. And this, is it on Medium? I'm not quite sure it is on Medium. No, it's in my magazine. It's in this month's magazine, Dear D Magazine. And it's, I think I have it. I don't think, I know I have it on Twitter as well. So yeah, do not watch that. A couple of new shows are added to Netflix. Killing Eve is down there. It's bonkers, but it's very good. And I'm wondering about Black Sails. I've heard a lot of good things about it, but I haven't watched it, but it is also on there. And then, I'm also watching Avatar: The Last Airbender on Netflix. It's season one. Look, if you want to watch Avatar, watch the cartoon, the animation, the animated version on Netflix that I think is maybe four or five seasons. It's fantastic. Season one of the live action is good. It's not great, but it is good. And they are committed to a season two or three. So, I recommend it because it is good. I don't think, what else am I watching? That may be about it. So I'll check on Jen, see how she's doing. Hopefully she'll be back. Well, she will, but she won't miss 2 weeks in a row. She's a son of a bitch for calling out sick, but she is actually sick. I got a couple of voice memos from her today. She was actually sick. So maybe I'm not going to write her up. Like, you know, I'll think twice about that. Maybe I'll just give her a PIP, a performance improvement plan. Anyway, find us on social media, on Facebook. Jen is more on Instagram. I'm more on Twitter. We both pop into Facebook. I'm also on Threads, but I'll probably go Twitter and then Spoutable and then Instagram with Jen. And I mostly view things on TikTok. I don't post many videos. Every now and then I post a little cheesy video or something, but mostly. But check us out. Rate us. Review us. Put us on auto download. Even if you don't listen to us, mark us as played. You know, tell your friends about us. We're in our second, I don't know if it's our second year. I don't know what the hell. But this is episode 101. So we're headed to 200 and our climb up the charts and our eventual goal of world dominance for podcasts. Like that's where we're headed. So anyway, have a great weekend. We'll see you later.
Love this podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and leave a review. Visit the episode description to find out how you can connect with the hosts on social media. Voice Memos is a production of Dear Dean Publishing. All rights and trademarks reserved. No portion of this podcast shall be reproduced commercially without consent.